Hi, this is Ananda, president of the Hare Krishna community near Washington, D.C. What follows is a Sunday lecture recorded at our temple. Every Sunday, we invite the public for meditation, singing, a lecture, and a vegetarian lunch. We'd love for you to join us. More information is available at isconofdc.org. That's isconofdc.org. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the talk.
It is a great honor to be with all of you, Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Temple. Special gratitude to Anutama Prabhu and Rukmini Devi, Prajbihari Prabhu and Ananda Vrindavan Devi, for opening the doors of their gracious hearts to invite me. And my special gratitude to each and every one of you for being here today. We are celebrating Balaram Purnima. It is on this day of the full moon that long ago Sri Balaram appeared within this world. He's the son of Devaki and Rohini. That's another story. Srila Prabhupada has written that we pray to Sri Balaram for spiritual strength. One of the great causes of conflict and suffering is not being aware of where our true strength actually is. On a material level, due to the ahankar, the false ego, we think that money is power, or academic knowledge is power, or beauty is power, or fame is power. And factually, all of these things, physical strength, physical fitness brings power. In the material level, they do. But they can't really solve the core problems of our lives. There is a saying, you can tell how rich you are by counting how many things you have that money cannot buy. Srila Prabhupada gives an analogy of a fast-flowing river. In that river, a male elephant, the most powerful creature that lives on the land, he goes into the river. Have any of you ever been directly confronted with a wild male elephant? When they're charging at you and roaring with wrath in their eyes, you realize that there's not too much your money or your physical fitness or your fame or your academic knowledge, even in Sanskrit. Not going to help you much. Male elephants, they wrap their trunk around a tree and just rip it out of the ground from the roots and throw it. Hare Krishna. You can go to Gold's Gym for 10,000 births. And you won't be able to do that. They have superior strength. We have a farm community in Karnataka. And once this male elephant, he was going to this neighbor's farm and just eating all the rice crop right when it was about to harvest. And he ate an entire field. And then he laid on his left side on a part that he hadn't eaten and completely crushed it. Then got up and laid on his right side in a different place and crushed that. And then he just laid down in different places. And then he got up and ate more. The whole neighbor's entire rice crop was destroyed by one elephant. Then he saw a little boy, 8 years old, charged at him and stabbed him to death with a tusk. Hadi hadi. So one day, after hearing these stories, two of our brahmacharis, monks, happened to be walking on a forest pathway. And that same gigantic male elephant saw them and roared and charged at them to trample in them, trample them, stab them, kill them. And they were, like, renounced. They were naistika brahmacharis. But what's that going to do? So they were, all they could do was run away. They were running and running, but male elephants are really fast runners. They gallop. You cannot outrun one. And as he was coming close behind, they realized they were about to die. There was nothing they could do. And one of them started praying to Krishna. Please, Krishna, if you want me to live, save me. If you want me to die, then let me chant your name when he's crushing me. And when he thought that, something happened. He was in his late 20s. He remembered an event that took place when he was about 8 years old. Should I tell? He's from a simple village. And a sadhu, a wandering religious hermit, came to the village and was speaking Bhagavad Katha, speaking about the Vedas and Krishna to the villagers. And how much do little children listen to that when you're 8 years old? But there was one story he told that really captured the attention of this when he was a child. And he had not thought of that story in probably 20 years. But at this moment, when he prayed, he remembered the story. I'm going to tell you the story. He told the story. He said, because in that area, it was a jungle place where he grew up, he said, if you're ever attacked by a wild, angry male elephant, the only hope you have is to find a hill and run down. If you run up a hill, they're going to catch you. If you run straight, they're going to catch you. But because they're so heavy, they can't go fast downhill. They have to go real slow, otherwise they fall because of their weight. So he remembered that. And there happened to be a hill right along the road that they were, the pathway that they were running. So they just, he said to the other brahmachari, he said, come with me, jump down the hill. He said, what? Jumped and pulled him. They both jumped and they started rolling down the hill and got up and running and rolling and running and rolling and running and rolling. And the elephant was, he was trying to get down the hill, but he was too slow because of his weight. So what's the moral to the story? If we actually want to overcome the powers that are beyond our own, the powers of birth, old age, disease, and death, We have to humble ourselves. We can't fight against Maya on the basis of what we know or what we can do. We have to completely humble ourselves before the higher power of God. Krishna promises when we take shelter of him, he will be there to protect us. So Prabhupada told a story when the male elephant, huge animal, goes into the fast-flowing river, he's swept away because the current of the river is beyond even him. But a little tiny fish, not the big fish, the little fish even, swimming upstream, downstream, across stream, effortlessly, happily. If that little fish were to fight against an elephant, be smashed in one moment. But it could live within the water happily. The elephant can't. And Prabhupada says, because the fish has learned to take shelter of the river. The elephant has not. The entire material nature, Krishna explains, Daivi Heshu Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya. This entire material existence and the whole spiritual existence, everything. Material nature is made up of these three modes of nature, the gunas. It's all working under Krishna's direction. It's insurmountable. But one who takes shelter of me can easily cross beyond it. And most of the stories we find in the great literatures are about how to access spiritual strength. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful, he conquered the universe. He could move his eyebrows in anger, and all the greatest kings of the heavens, what to speak of the earth, would tremble in fear. Now, you and me, you move your eyeballs, nobody cares. However rich you are, however strong you are, however renounced you are, go ahead, move your eyebrows. We're insignificant compared to Hiranyakashipu. He had enormous wealth. He had enormous physical strength. He had enormous intelligence. He had all these yogic siddhis where he could perform practically any miracle at any time. And then there was little Prahlad. He was just a 5-year-old child. He didn't have anything except love for Krishna. And however many times Hiranyakashipu tried to harm him, he just humbled himself before Krishna. I'm yours. And ultimately Narasimhadev came to protect him in every circumstance. Ambarish Maharaj was a simple family man. Durvas Muni was the most powerful yogi of the time. For no good reason at all, he tried to destroy Ambarish Maharaj. What was his strength? He humbled himself before Krishna. He took shelter of the power of God, and he was protected. He defeated Durvas Muni without even trying. It's a nice ringer, actually. But we already heard it. Draupadi. Draupadi is a lady, a very feminine, sweethearted lady. And Dushasana, it is described, he was a Maharati. Each of his arms had the strength of thousands of elephants. That's the way warriors were in those days. And with all of his power, filled with wrath, he was pulling at Draupadi's sari. Physically, she had no hope of protecting herself. She was intellectually trying to figure out ways, and she was speaking very, very cutting words to others, but that didn't work. She turned to her husbands, the Pandavas. They couldn't help. She tried every possible option in the material world, and nothing could help her. Until she raised her arms to take shelter of the strength of Krishna's grace. And she cried out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda." And Krishna was there to protect her. Bhagavad Gita tells, "Dukalayam ashashvatam." The real problems of life are birth, old age, disease, and death. And Srila Prabhupada would often say, this is the real problem, the problem of death. Because the soul's eternal. The greatest fear and the greatest misery is this conception of being vulnerable to the limitations of the body. We have to suffer pain, disgrace, betrayal, disease, and ultimately death. I have seen how material nature, we've all seen, humbles us all, but when do we get the message? People who are champions in physical strength, people who have billions and billions of dollars, people who have multi-PhDs, people who have fame and influence that could practically accomplish anything they want in this world. But one little mosquito bites them that has that malaria substance, they're knocked out. What could they do? And if it's a particular type of mosquito, they die. And smaller than a mosquito is certain type of viruses or cancer. You can't even see it with a microscope until it gets later, but its initial stages, before we even know it's there, it could fill our body. Whoever we are, whatever we are, it's the way material nature works. The body is vulnerable to suffering and death. That's a problem. And as long as we have that fear, and as long as we're depending on this physical body to be the source of our happiness and our protection, we're destined to suffer. Because there are just limitless powers beyond our own within material nature, both within and without. But when we realize that we're the eternal soul, full of knowledge and full of happiness, that our real purpose in life to love and to feel the limitless happiness of Krishna or God's love, when we realize that, it's beyond birth, it's beyond death, then our mind and our body becomes an instrument for that purpose. It's not that we have to use our body and mind to try to find some happiness outside of ourselves to bring it in, to fill the void within our own hearts. Real happiness is when we find that joy within us that is transcendental to all of the temporary conditions of this world, and we share that with the world through whatever we do. Whether we're in business, politics, farming, family life, or whether we're swamis or brahmacharis, We have something great within us. But how to uncover that joy? How to uncover that deathless state that is our true nature? It's impossible. That's the truth for us. This material energy, Maya, the illusion that causes us to chase after these temporary objects through greed and lust and envy, anger, arrogance. It's more powerful than us. And even if we take to a religious or spiritual path, still, it's just a matter of time till we are faced with the reality of material temptation and fear. And then we compromise. Maya will promise so many things. Not maybe. She will. The material energy will do everything and anything to distract us in such an expert way that we won't even think we're being distracted. Lord Chaitanya explained, when you try to cultivate this seed of devotion, many weeds, Maya will present so many weeds. The only purpose of those weeds is to strangle your devotional inclinations. But the weeds just look just like the seed of devotion. So we water them. We serve them. We trust them that they're going to make us happy. And that's what happens. Krishna wants us to cooperate, but Maya, in this age of Kali, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, will create so many reasons to fight. And then the fighting starts becoming more and more an egoistic matter, and then we start hating and judging and all this stuff in the name of love and truth. It's a weed taking the form of what we're thinking is defending the truth. It happens. Practically every one of these terrorists, that weed is convincing them they are defending the highest truth. They don't believe they're doing something wrong. They believe that they're doing God's will. And in a more normal setting, how we fight and we fracture each other's relationships on the basis of petty conceptions. When you have a higher experience of truth, then you see what really happens. Without that, a grain of sand could look like an enormous mountain. But when you have truth, when you connect to that inner truth, you see the grain of sand for what it is and strive for what the real mountain is. So how to maintain our spiritual principles when we're being tempted? Put it aside and I'll give you so much. Or fear, if you don't put it aside, I will take everything away. To maintain our principles, despite all of these distractions, temptations, and fears, is called integrity, or what Srila Prabhupada called character. That's all important. But it's easier said than done. We read in the great scriptures the type of integrity that devotees had to please Krishna. I will remain pure. Whatever I can get by giving it up, doesn't matter. Whatever I might lose by sustaining these principles, it doesn't matter. Because we understand our real wealth, our real happiness, is samsiddhya haritoshanam. Is pleasing Krishna, pleasing God. To have that spiritual strength is only possible by God's grace. When we chant the holy names, Srila Prabhupada said, like a baby crying for mother. Because Krishna, Radha, Balaram, they are in their names. And all the power and strength to protect us, to sustain us, to empower us, are within the names. A little baby, maybe 3 months old, there's about this big, I think. When that baby's in danger, see? I've seen it in India. Little baby, the mother puts it down, and all of a sudden this gigantic monkey comes. And the baby goes, ah! And what does the mother do? Comes running to save the baby. If the baby didn't scream out for the mother like this, the mother would be just out, you know, shopping or whatever. So, you see, let's just look at that little baby before she goes. She's completely dependent. If a dog or a cat or a monkey or some big human comes to impose danger on it, the baby cries with faith that my mother, my father will come to protect me. Actually, we're all like that baby. And on a material level, we can never be anything but that baby. If Krishna doesn't supply air, we cannot survive. However much money and strength and influence you have. Whether you're a little brahmachari in the ashram or the king of the world, you're dependent on air in the same way. And you're depending on the rains coming from the skies and the crops and fruits and vegetables that grow from the ground. And the sunshine. If the sun goes out, what are we going to do? We're going to die. Doesn't matter who we are. Real knowledge is to understand this, not how much I know. Real knowledge is how much I'm totally dependent on the grace of Krishna. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavamam pabhantite vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. After many, many births of cultivating knowledge, when one finally comes to the point of real knowledge, one surrenders. Surrender doesn't mean defeat. Surrender means being honest. I'm completely dependent on the gifts of God. So why not give Krishna? Krishna says in Gita, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. I'm the strength of the strong. I'm the ability in men and women to realize our dependence like that baby. That is true strength. Because when we connect by taking shelter, like Prahlad, then Krishna will always be there to remove the cloud of illusion so that we could actually understand that I am Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. I'm an eternal loving servant of my beloved Lord. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. That when this cataract of illusion is removed and our eyes are decorated with the salve of love and devotion, then Krishna reveals himself, Shyam Sundar, Madan Mohan. And then we're fearless. Bhajahure mana srinanda nandana abhaye charanada vindare. Srila Prabhupada would love to sing this song. During the time of the communist regime in the former Soviet Union, the devotees in Russia, they knew at any moment they could be arrested, imprisoned, and tortured for no other reason except following the path of devotion. And they often tell me that when they would come together, they would love to sing this song. Bhajahuremana srinandanandana abhaya charanara vindare. Because it was a fearful situation. They not only knew what could happen to them at any moment, but it happened to so many of their friends. My dear mind, please worship Srinandanandana, the supreme beloved of our heart who appeared as the son of Srinanda Maharaj. Because by doing that, you become fearless. It's the highest strength to humble ourselves, to take shelter of the Lord, accesses us to the supreme power of God's grace. Beyond anything of this world. The Srimad Bhagavatam gives the example, and Prabhupada would cite it many times, that this material existence is like a huge ocean, a shoreless ocean, unending. And we're right in the middle of it. How are we going to cross it? Srila Prabhupada cites the acharyas in the scriptures that trying to cross this limitless ocean of material existence by our own efforts, by our own knowledge, or by that of others is like holding on to the tail of a dog. Because dogs know how to swim, naturally. They never even take swimming lessons. But they know how to swim. I've seen. You know, they just throw a dog in water and they just go. They do the dog paddle. It's really a nice. I once won a contest when I was a little boy for doing the dog paddle. It's the only thing I could do, actually. The reason I won is because every other stroke it was like who could get to that side fast and this side fast before everyone else. But the dog paddle was just whoever could stay in the water the longest. And anybody else could have done it longer than me, but everyone got bored and left. But trying to cross over this ocean of material existence by our efforts or anyone else's efforts is like trying to hold on to the tail of a dog. Yes, they know how to swim, but in the ocean? But when we take shelter of Krishna, the ocean reduces in size to the amount of water contained in the hoofprint of a small calf. We could just cross over it. That's Krishna's grace. But in order to take shelter, we have to have faith.
Because we're so habituated, we're so conditioned by the ego of ourselves and by the ego of so many others and by all the propaganda of this world of what will make you happy. We need faith that there's something else that's actually going to make me happy, not all that stuff. And that faith is possible. The next line of the song. Durlabha Manava. What? Durlabha Manava Janama Satsange. By the association of devotees, of enlightened people, that satsang can give us the faith by being with people who have that faith, who are with us cultivating that faith. With that faith, we can make that connection. And we can keep that connection through our spiritual practices. And then we gain a real strength. The strength of the supreme grace of the absolute truth of Krishna. The grace of the Lord is so sweet and it is so gentle, but it is the most powerful force in all of existence, because it's the extension of God's love for us, and there is no greater power than that. And the essence of all true religions is to connect with that power, with that current of grace, and to live as an instrument of that grace. It heals us, it empowers us. Balaram Jayanti is a day when we pray to Balaram to protect us, to empower us with spiritual strength. When Garga Muni did the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram in Gokul Mahavan, he said, "This child, his name will be Baladev or Balaram, because he will take great pleasure in exhibiting spiritual strength." And Balaram's position is so special. He's considered to be the original guru. And all the shiksha gurus and diksha gurus and other types of true gurus are empowered representatives of Balaram. Balaram is Krishna himself, but in the role of a servant of Krishna. He's the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. In the spiritual world, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita goes in great explanation of the true eternal spiritual identity of Balaram. In the spiritual world, he expands himself in every way to serve Krishna and all the devotees of Krishna. He becomes the abode of Goloka or Vrindavan. That's an expansion of Balaram's body. He becomes Krishna's shoes, Krishna's bed, Krishna's clothes, Krishna's ornaments. And what does Krishna use his clothes and his ornaments and his shoes and everything else for? Usually he doesn't even wear shoes, but somehow it says it's shoes. It's all to reciprocate love with his devotees. Krishna's rasa vihari. That's all he does. He's just loving relationships with Sri Radha and all the infinite devotees. And in every type of relationship, Balaram is a leading devotee serving Krishna. In Dasyaras, as a servant, he's carrying out Krishna's orders. Sakyaras as a friend. He's a cowherd boy playing with Krishna, joking with Krishna, laughing and dancing with Krishna. Vatsalyaras, because he appears as an older brother, he's also at times protecting Krishna like a parent. And Madhuryaras, Balaram himself expands himself as Sri Radha's younger sister, Ananga Manjari, to be in the most intimate, loving pastimes of Krishna and gopis. In every way, he's serving. In every way, he's facilitating all of us, all living beings, to reciprocate love with Krishna. In Ram Lila, he appeared as Lakshman. Lakshman and Ram were inseparable. When Ram was banished to the forest for 14 years, Lakshman said, "I'm coming with you. I care nothing for this kingdom. I care nothing for any of the comforts of life in Ayodhya. Wherever you are, my life, my soul, my only happiness is in serving you." And Sita felt the same way. What was Lakshman's position? Ram would be with Sita. Lakshman would make a nice little house out of wood and straw and make a bed for them. And they'd go inside and he'd stay out and guard outside the door all night long. He would collect fruits and do everything simply so that Ram and Sita could be happy together. He never slept for 14 years. He was too busy serving and facilitating others to serve. And as Lord Balaram and Krishna Lila, he was always there in every possible way to facilitate the loving exchanges between Krishna, Radha, and all devotees. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Lila, he became Nityananda Prabhu. But before discussing that, let's go a little back into Krishna's Lila. Because Ananda Vrindavan Devi gave me permission to tell a story. Krishna and Balaram, the all-powerful personality of Godhead, who appeared in two forms, as the supreme master and the supreme servant, they accepted the role of little children, just to charm our hearts. That is Vrindavan, Madhurya Dham, the Dham of the deepest sweetness, the sweetness of spontaneous intimate love. Srila Prabhupada explained that in order to understand properly the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's important that we carefully, verse by verse, read the first 9 cantos. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita begins with the conflict of confusion of Arjuna. And even though he was the most powerful warrior practically in the whole world with his Gandiva bow in hand, there were powers around him that made him completely confused, bewildered, and helpless. And he turned to Krishna. "Please instruct me. You're my guru. Help me." And Krishna spoke the Gita. He begins by describing the nature of the soul, the eternal nature of the soul, the nature of karma, how it's bound within this material world by our actions and our reactions. He explains the nature of the intelligence and the nature of the mind. John Milton wrote that the mind is a thing of itself. It could make heaven into hell or hell into heaven. We all have that experience. What a magnificent creation the mind is. It's stunning. But subjectively, for one who has a mind, it could really make life unbearable. Krishna's telling us the mind is the best friend when it's in connection with the grace of God. And when it's not, it can be our worst enemy. Hankering, lamenting, accepting, rejecting. And ultimately, Krishna explains his own opulences, his own powers, his own greatness, and how every living being is a part of him. And the Gita culminates, Sarva Dharma Purujasya. Abandon all varieties of dharma, all occupations and religions, and go right to the essence, which is to take shelter, sharanagati, to surrender with love. Man mana bhavamad bhakto majeshim nam namaskuru. By always remembering the Lord in devotion. The Srimad Bhagavatam begins at that point. The essence. Dharma projita kaitavatra. From the very beginning, all materialistic purposes of religion are not included in Srimad Bhagavatam. Only the essence, ecstatic love for Krishna, the personality of Godhead. And the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with incredible stories. Maharaj Parikshit, the king of the world, gives up everything just to hear about Krishna. What are the duties of a man about to die? What is the essence of all religions? What is the prime purpose of humanity? And Shukadev Goswami speaks. He tells stories of Varahadev. He tells stories of the creation. The creation, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshai Vishnu, Kshirodakshai Vishnu, how the Lord, who is so powerful and so great, just by his exhalation, limitless universes come out of his body. Now we think we're God. During this class, you've already exhaled thousands of times. What happened? But this is Vishnu. And he does it while he's sleeping. Yoga Nidra. And he inhales, and all the cosmic manifestation enters into his body and becomes unmanifested. And by one glimpse, the amount of time of a nimesh, a twelfth of a second, he glances and impregnates limitless living beings into material nature to take birth in 8,400,000 species. And then he appears within the world after creating everything and creating Brahma and so many secondary creators. Then he appears to manifest incredible pastimes to show us his greatness. As Varahadev, he lifted the earth effortlessly and flew into the sky. Arivo. As Narasingadev. Kurma, Ram. When we understand God's greatness, the Virat Rupa is explained in great detail in Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we come to the 10th canto. Now listen carefully, please. It begins with a great crisis. Devaki and Vasudeva are just getting married. And it was a really nice marriage. And the cousin brother of Devaki, Kamsa, says, I just want to make you so happy, my sister Devaki. Even though I'm a great prince and very powerful and influential, I will personally drive you in my chariot to your new home. Oh, Devaki was thrilled, and Vasudeva was very... He was weary, but he was... he accepted the ride. And then that voice came in the sky. Kamsa, you fool, the eighth child of your
sister is going to kill you.
He grabbed her hair. He was very powerful. He drew his sword and was about to sever her head. At that time, Vasudev spoke so much logic and knowledge and philosophy to Kamsa, but Kamsa was fearful. He couldn't hear any of it. But when Vasudev promised him, "I'll give you all my children," what integrity! Because Kamsa understood that Vasudev would never speak a lie. He had such character. Kamsa, even though he knew if Vasudev did any trick, he would be dead, and he valued his life so much, he was willing to kill his own sister in front of everybody. But he understood the integrity of Vasudev. If he speaks this, then it's true. He let them go. But later on, he imprisoned them. And he kept them in prison and kept killing the children. And the seventh child, Krishna. Krishna approached Yogamaya. His spiritual energy, which is also the source of the material energy. Srila Prabhupada explains the difference between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. It's one energy, like electricity, coming from the same powerhouse, Krishna. But if you put electricity into a refrigerator, it becomes cold. If you put it into a heater, it becomes hot. So Yogamaya is the energy that connects us with Krishna. Through love. And Mahamaya is that which causes us, which creates endless distractions to take our attention away from Krishna. So Krishna talked to Yogamaya and said, "I am going to take birth." And he gave her all these instructions. But you could discuss that on Janmashtami. But I'm just going to, because I want all of you to hear it from your exalted speakers in Janmashtami. But he said, my first expansion, Balaram, is going to enter into the womb of Devaki. And you should transfer him at the proper time into the womb of Rohini. Interesting. Balaram first entered the womb of Devaki to prepare the way for Krishna, to make everything in the womb really nice for Krishna. That's what he did. He just prepared everything so nicely for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the Haribamsa of what actually happened. It was midnight. Rohini Devi, she was pregnant. She was a wife of Vasudev also, because in those days, princes and kings would sometimes have more than one wife. So Vasudev, his best friend was Nanda Maharaj in Gokul. And he sent his wife Rohini to take shelter of Nanda Maharaj. And she was pregnant. And while she was in Gokul, in the protection of Nanda Maharaj, during her pregnancy, she had a dream at midnight. She dreamed that her child was finished. She dreamed that she lost her baby. She was in total distress, and she woke up and she realized her baby was gone, was not in her womb anymore. She was in so much disturbance. At that time, Yogamaya spoke to her. and said, actually, I'm transferring Devaki's son to you. Rohini is actually the eternal mother of Balaram in the spiritual world. Balaram was in her womb, but then the Balaram and Devaki's womb came and they merged together and entered into Rohini's womb. And soon after, on this day of the full moon, she gave birth to Balaram. It was a great festival. And just a couple weeks later, Devaki gave birth to Krishna, simultaneous to Rohini, which is beautiful stories. I mean, Yashoda in Gokul. So Krishna and Balaram were little children playing together. They were just about the same age. Shukadev Goswami goes to great care describing their little baby pastimes. Yashoda and Rohini were like the most dearmost sisters, taking care of their two babies together. Sometimes they'd look in Krishna Balaram's mouth and Rohini would see little teeth coming and she would count them. And then Yashoda would look in Krishna's mouth and see little teeth and they'd count the teeth and compare how many teeth were growing. And sometimes they would crawl around and they would grab little calves' tails and the calves would get scared and start running and they would hold on, Krishna Balaram would hold on to the tails and go through the mud and they would cry. They were afraid to let go. And all the gopis would laugh. And then when the calves stopped, they'd crawl to their mothers for shelter. As they grew older, they took care of the calves. And when they reached their poganda age, which means the age from 6 to 10, they were given charge of the cows. So Shukadeva Goswami describes how Krishna and Balaram would play so many games with their friends. One day, as they were going to the pastures together, Krishna was speaking to Balaramji about how everything in Vrindavan was coming to honor him. And he was praising Vrindavan. The bees, they are following you, Balaram, and they're singing such beautiful Vedic hymns in your honor. And they just keep following you wherever you go. And the river Yamuna, seeing you, is blossoming with full-blown, fragrant lotus flowers. And the breezes of Vrindavan are personally bringing that fragrance to you. And the trees, they have so many fruits that they're bowing down before you, Sri Balaram. And not only that, but they're just abundant with so many fruits. And they're so beautiful with flowers, just to honor. And the sky and the clouds. Krishna was describing the beauty of nature. Look, the peacocks are dancing for you, and the cuckoos are singing for you, and the does, the little deers, their eyes are gazing upon you with such love. Because on a spiritual state of consciousness, we see nature in relationship with Krishna. One time, Srila Prabhupada was walking in a beach in the West Coast and the sun was setting. And somebody said, isn't this a beautiful sunset? Prabhupada said, if you think the art is beautiful, you should see the artist. When we see everything in relationship to Krishna, we see everything as it is. Because everything does have a relationship with Krishna. Environmentalism from a bhakti perspective, from a spiritual perspective, is honoring everything as Krishna's divine energy to be respected and honored and utilized in harmony with the will of Krishna, not seeing anything separate.
So they were playing together so many games. Sometimes they were covering each other's eyes. Sometimes they were playing with balls. Sometimes they would play and they'd get tired, and Krishna or Balaram would get tired and put his head on Krishna's lap, and sometimes vice versa. Krishna would fan Balaram. They would decorate themselves with minerals and flowers and play. Then Sukadeva Goswami says, but still, Krishna and Balaram, although they were playing just like ordinary little boys, just to exchange love in the most intimate way and to attract our hearts in doing so, sometimes they revealed their supreme godly powers. One day, Stoka Krishna, Subal, and Sridhama, they came to Krishna and Balaram. They said, "Oh Balaram, oh Krishna, you are so strong and you are so powerful and you are so kind to your devotees. Please hear what we have to say. Nearby there's a forest called Talavan. There's beautiful trees with big ripe fruits, and those fruits are so sweet and they are so fragrant. And they're falling to the ground by the hundreds and hundreds. But because there is an asura, Denuka, who's living there, he's actually a powerful yogi who's in the form of an ass with so many of his friends. They're so cruel that if any human goes into that forest, they will eat them alive. Not even the birds will come near that forest. But everyone, all the Brijabasis and even us, we want to enjoy those nice fruits." So Krishna and Balaram said yes. And they entered into the Talavan forest. And Balaram went to one tree and he shook the tree, and all these tal fruits were falling to the ground. It was making a lot of noise. Denukasura heard this. He was so angry. "How dare anyone come to my forest?" He was outraged. When you have this false ego, you can't tolerate when someone is trespassing. So he came galloping. The entire ground was shaking like an earthquake. He ran right up to Balaram. His eyes were red like coals. He turned his rear end to Balaram's face. And with his legs, he kicked right against Balaram's chest. And this Denukasura was enormous. He was bigger than this entire temple building. And Balaram was just a little boy. Can you imagine the kicks of a regular old ass? This is a monstrous mystic. Each of his legs were like millions of elephants. He was kicking and kicking and kicking Balaram's chest, and Balaram was just standing there. Denukasura got even more angry. Seeing Balaram standing there, he started screaming, roaring, but really loud. His eyes were glowing with rage, and he started running in circles and circles and circles and came back to Balaram, and with all of his strength, he kicked his hind legs. And Balaram effortlessly grabbed them with one hand. Spiritual strength. And then he lifted up Denukasura and started twirling him. Like this, like children like to twirl things. He was going, and he twirled so much that Denukasura died of dizziness. sounds like that kind of. But, and then Balaram just playfully just threw them to the top of the highest tree in the whole forest of Talavan. And because he was so heavy, the tree started moving and shaking and shaking and shaking, and all the other trees and near that tree was shaking because of that tree, and then that tree started falling, and all the other trees started falling. And when Denukasura's friends saw what happened, they totally lost their intelligence. They were so envious and so furious. How dare he do that to our leader? And suddenly there was a herd of monstrous yogi asses. Now, yogis can be great, peaceful, Vibhur Bhakti yogis. Yogis can be peaceful, but yogis can also use their powers for evil purposes, too. And they could change their forms. So each of them came running. And Krishna and Balaram, both of them, one at a time, were taking them by the hind legs and going, twirling them around and throwing. And it's explained by Shukadev Goswami, what a beautiful scene it was. It sounds kind of ghastly, doesn't it? But it was beautiful because it was Krishna and Balaram. Actually, all of these, Denuka and his friends or accomplices, they were all liberated. They all got mukti. They got liberation. So it was a good thing. And because Krishna did all this with Balaram, it was actually beautiful. Their bodies looked like wonderful clouds floating everywhere. And all the boys were dancing and jumping up and down and clapping their hands, saying, "Well done, Balaram, well done, Balaram, well done, Krishna." And the devas were showering flowers. And then the people of Vrindavan could come and eat the fruits. But the cowherd boys didn't eat those fruits because they felt that they were not worthy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that these different demons or asuras that came to Vrindavan represented certain obstacles in the path of devotion. And Denukasura specifically, the gross materialistic intelligence that we may acquire in our life that is contrary to our true spiritual identity. It's like a burden. It makes us proud. It makes us arrogant. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he instructed Sanatana Goswami, he explains volumes of philosophy to him over a period of 1 month, every day, all day. But he began with the premise, Jivera Swarupor Krishnara Nityatas. When we have this foundation to our understanding that we're eternally the loving servants of Krishna, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam, always dependent on Krishna, then whatever we learn from that, built on that foundation, has incredible spiritual value. But if we don't have that basic premise, then whatever we learn could further distract us from the truth. Balaram, the original guru, gives us this information, our true identity by which we can build our knowledge and our perceptions of the world, not as exploiters, but as compassionate servants. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, that same supreme, all-powerful Balaram appears as Nityananda Prabhu. And along with Haridas Thakur Brahma, he goes house to house, pleading with each and every one of us
take Krishna's names. Chant these holy names. Remember Krishna. Live a life of service. And in this way, you will be happy. The love that you're searching for is within yourself. Chant the names of the Lord and connect with it. And if you do, I will be your, you will be my very life and soul. Nityananda Prabhu would fall at the feet of materialistic people and beg them, take these names of Krishna. Understand this life of devotion. Srila Prabhupada, on the order of his guru, just as Nityananda on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that, on the order of his guru, he didn't just go from house to house, he went from country to country, from city to city, to person with the same message. Chant and be happy. That is the mercy of Balaram, the supreme strength. Thank you very much.